So let's open up for some questions here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I thank you very much, and I just wanted to just kind of, I always like to come around full circle, right? So when we look at these, we're looking at all these different diets, we're looking at the different components, like this food, one person might be sensitive to the low histamine diet, the low phenol diet, the low, blah, blah, blah. And if you looked at it and you do it from their perspective, it's like suddenly what is there to eat? And if you were to try to make a chart, this is something I want to do, is if you were to make a chart listing all the possible good healthy foods that we would want people to eat, and across the top, all the different diets. And then you just checked off what is it that is excluded from these different diets. And then you went back and said, okay, I'm just going to be safe with somebody. And I'm just going to play it safe. And whatever line has no check marks all the way across, those are the foods I'm going to give to people to eat. I want to get, you know, I want to kind of play a game here and say, how many foods do you think would be filling that bill?
Yeah, very few. But then I went on that mono diet, like what did I eat, pumpkin for
like
month
one food
or something, right? But I was willing to do that for my health just to bring the inflammation down.
Exactly. And so it's a temporary kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to look at these diets as they are temporary restrictions while you're working the underlying and cleaning it. Because sometimes it just doesn't work. The whatever the level that's built up to this point where you're seeing that person is exceeded their tolerance level.
Yeah.
And taking it away is going to make them feel better temporarily, but they're also going to not have anything to eat. And very soon they're going to develop all sorts of other nutrient deficiencies because they don't need to eat.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just do it the other way where you go, okay, I'm just going to start with getting them on a clean diet and cleaning up their microbiome and filling it in and getting rid of the bad gut bugs and healing their leaky gut and doing all these things, the person is still suffering and still making the problem worse because they keep putting these things in.
Right. Especially if it's interfering with their ability, like if it's a kid who's, you know, having difficulty communicating because of these issues,
right,
then it's worth doing this kind of diet short term. But it's my personal assertion that we cannot have a balanced diet if we're actually avoiding like oxalates or phenols long term.
Right. I agree with you. I agree with you because when you look at the list of those foods, there's very few. And I just also want to really point out with this stuff, it's a dose dependency.
Yeah.
So we have oxalates, for example. You can't avoid them, period. You just can't.
Yeah, everywhere.
It's about every food. So it's dose dependent. And so we reduce the load. It's always about reducing the load that's in the bucket so the bucket doesn't overflow. And as you see, I mean, these phenols, they're our body's molecules that keep us alive. Serotonin, dopamine, tyrosine, epinephrine, norepinephrine, right? We need those chemicals. And so our body has to be able to tolerate that level.
Yeah.
Going. And if you start adding in all the chemicals, the stuff that's on food, then you're overtaxing it. So you've got to, for everybody, remove the toxic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're sensitive to this stuff or not, it could be just a matter of time where you overstep their tolerance. So it's really a matter of sitting with people, and like Tony reiterated in the chat, you go back to the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
The foundations of good diet, clean lifestyle, low stress, that works for everybody. Now, the uniqueness within that of certain people can't tolerate some of the good stuff is there. But it's there because there's some sort of underlying imbalance.
Yeah.
It's rare that it's a true, completely controlled by genetic thing. Yes, there are genetic diseases. Don't get me wrong. There are totally genetic diseases. Somebody born with PKU cannot handle phenylketonuria. It's just there's a gene that's missing, right? You're not going to fix it with food. You're going to fix it avoiding food. But most of these things are a combination of genes and acquired. And it could be a combination along with the exposures, the vaccines, the crappy environment in the hospital where they were born with all the chemicals, in the home with all the chemicals, the stress, mom's stress during pregnancy. I mean, things go into this. And our job is to help these people not to feel so helpless and hopeless. and help them create a group of foods that they can tolerate, work on the underlying so we can expand that. But I've seen people on low oxalate diets, low histamine diets, forever. And when you see them, they're still eating a lot of the quote-unquote allowed foods because they're not high histamine, but they're complete crap. And so they're not fixing the cause. So I love the way you put this together because it helps us to see that this is a problem, this is a diet, or all of these are diets that are not meant to put people on forever and ever, amen. It's meant to be underlying. And I love what you talk about with the DAO, gets produced by some of the good gut bugs and some of the others. And DAO, for those of you who have never heard that term before, it's an enzyme that the body naturally produces, or the bugs in the gut will naturally to break down the histamine. So we have this natural mechanism in us that, there's histamines all over the place, but we're supposed to break it down.
Yeah.
But this DAO, the problem with the DAO is all of the supplement companies put talc in it and other complete garbage that I feel uncomfortable with. But that said, it's sometimes better than nothing.
Right?
We have somebody in this program who has had a recent experience with that, and it's like really brought her histamine levels down, so she actually can tolerate things and have, a life. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So for her, the negative of having talc and some of the other crap in those supplements outweighed the benefit she got from it. Now, long term, that may not be true. Long term, but it gives her the opening, the space to now be able to help the underlying. So,
the other thing with this is that if the food is causing so much inflammation that their gut can't heal, then we can't fix the underlying problem without a little bit of a patch job sometimes, as long as we recognize that that's what it is.
That's what it is. It's a patch. And it's a patch that gives you. So somebody's coming in and they have such severe migraines that they can't see, they can't tolerate it. You're going to talk to them about getting rid of chocolate and eating greens? I mean, seriously. You're like, come on, I'm blind. Just give me some help. You're going to give them something. If you're a medical doctor, you're going to kindness for your own heart, even if you don't believe in it, you're going to give them a shot of something to get the pain down, but you're not going to send them on their way once you do that. You're going to help them to get the pain down, and you're going to work on what's causing it underneath. So we just have to all come from a place of not being so dogmatic. I mean, let's just call it dogmatic about our belief, that we're not willing to use something that's less than ideal in the long term to give that relief in the short term that many people need. So I'm on my high horse about this because I see a lot of people get into this dogmatic, and I call it, it's basically diet dogma, diet religion. How about cult, right?
Yeah.
And we cross the line into cult when the practices can become dangerous, but we continue them anyway because we've been told by the powers that be, like a cult leader, Oh, yes, you're going to be saved and go to heaven if you chop off the heads of the third person next to you. And everybody bows and does it. That's when, some religion or, following or spiritual practice becomes a cult because it's dangerous. And we don't want people to be locked into these cultisms around food that they're not willing to, I've been vegan for 32 years, but if I was missing something or needed something that was from a bee venom or from an animal of some sort that was going to save me or my kid's life, I'm going to let go of that dogma, cult, religion piece of food choices.
Right.
And I'm going to go with what's needed at the moment. So we're all about what serves us best and what serves our clients best. Even if it's not in 100% alignment with the long-term strategy, give them that temporary relief. And these diets go a long way in helping people. But if we ignore the gut bugs and we let them continue to eat whatever candy that doesn't have any of these in it, sugar balls, bonbons,
they're not going to get better.
They're not going to get better.
Right. But we've been taught, and they've been taught, wrong focus by the media because it's a simple magic bullet thing. Focus on the food, like, hey, these foods are good for you. These foods make you fat. These foods have oxalates and do this. Like, so they're just like, okay, I'm trying this new diet. I'm trying this new diet, and they're focused on the food, and they don't know anything about what the food is doing in their body or anything about this sulfation pathway because they haven't been taught. We haven't been taught anything about our bodies. We've just been taught food, like the external thing that I need, the source of my, like, solution to my problems, that I'll buy this food and it'll fix everything. And that's just not the case. So getting out of that thinking is actually kind of challenging sometimes.
Oh yeah, it totally is. We want to believe that, okay, everything is just coming down to just good food choices. And in reality, it's not. The food choices are critical, but the thought choices are just as critical too.
Right.
So scared of eating because they're sensitive to this, they're sensitive to that. Does that have this in it? Does that have this in it? Does that have that in it?
Right.
They're
going
to have more disruption of their health from the stress of worrying about the fact that they can't eat anything than they would by just letting, relaxing and allowing. An example is talking to somebody who said was having really severe heartburn. And I said, well, slippery elm can help dramatically. She says, well, I can't have slippery elm because I'm supposed to be going at low FODMAP. So I said, well, you know, have you tried it? I mean, does it actually aggravate? Did you try slippery elm and it's floating in gas? She says, well, no, I haven't. I said, well, you know, you're going to look at this and say, well, if I'm doubled over with severe heartburn pain and I take the slippery elm and it causes that to go away and a couple hours later I have a little gas and bloating, was it worth it? She goes,
yeah.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we have to start being very, just very open to all of this and very flexible. I'm on this diet, but this is, well, yeah, the slippery elm has a little bit of FODMAP, but a little bit of FODMAP here to solve this problem. You know, is it really going to, right, compared to maybe she could take Nexium, which is going to cause,
But it's big picture, too, like being able to zoom out and look at the big picture.
Yep.
Like, are we going to focus on those little details, or are we going to look at the big picture? And I think really being holistic requires that we do that.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I didn't mention in this presentation is meditation has been shown to stabilize mast cells and reduce histamine release in our bodies. But nobody knows about this. They just know about the histamine diet, again, because it's food-focused, right? It's just something that we can purchase and to solve our problem instead of something that we have to really change within ourselves.
Right. And it's all about, like, everything we do is about helping people to change, to facilitate the change, and to facilitate letting go of old habits and old beliefs that they've adopted since they were born. They picked up their parents. They see it all around them, and we're questioning it. We're helping them to question it. And it's hard, but is it worth it? I mean, really, seriously. When I look at these diet things and all these little pieces, I'm just really more in awe of how fasting can be such
a... Oh, my gosh. It's so much easier. It's so much mental clarity compared to this mess of foods.
And not everybody can do it, but, you know,
right.
You're not going to take a three-year-old and fast them, but even just a day or two sometimes helps some of this inflammation to go down. And I look back at my own journey where I did a 28-day water fast, and I was struggling for 2 years with eliminating this and eliminating that, and then the next thing you know, this other thing that used to be okay with me was not okay with me anymore. I was driving myself nuts, 28 days on water alone, and it all went away. Right, because my whole body got a chance to go down. Now, not everybody is completely healed from 28 days, and it's also, there's what you said, the meditation and all that other piece in there to give that the head space, the spiritual space.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, wonderful.
Super, yay! Any questions? Anybody have questions, comments? I see some comments coming in. Dr. Ali, I think I have to watch this webinar 20 times. Yeah. Yeah, and you know what I'd love to do? If anybody beats me to the punch on this one, I would like to just make all the little food things that we've gone through and then do that chart, like all the healthy.
Love it.
I did it once I took FODMAPs, SCD, and healthy eating because a lot of the FODMAPs and SCD stuff is still crap, right? They have
those
on those lists.
You know what I did for someone, which was a joke, but is only a joke because it's reality. I made them a FODMAP food chart that was blank. And it said yes on one column. And then it said not worth it in another column. And then it said maybe worth a try in another column.
Oh, that's nice.
But, like, because I think once we put all these in a chart, we're going to just see that it's just a cacophony.
Impossible.
Like, it's, yeah, it's impossible.
Really impossible.
But that highlights the underlying truth.
Yeah.
That we need to find a holistic solution to this instead of just being in avoidance land.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it all comes back to, I hate to keep saying it, and you guys think I'm a broken record, and every time somebody asks me, well, what do I do about hot flashes, and what do I do about this, and what do I do about that? And I'm a broken record, because you have to go down to foundation. You have to go down to the basic foundations of good health that I would venture to say none of us in this program got from our birth. None of us at all were taught from birth how to eat, how to think, how to breathe, how to create a clean environment. It's all stuff we've had to learn now. And so, you know, that's the same thing with our clients, patients. They need this support, and we need to be there for them. And we can't get caught up in dogma. We can't get caught, up in cult because, yeah, maybe somebody is sensitive to histamines, but they do fine with grapes or whatever, something on that list. I don't have those lists memorized, but they do fine with one of the higher histamine foods in small amounts. Yeah, so it's not a matter of complete avoidance, because you can't completely avoid histamines and phenols because they're in the body. The body makes serotonin.
Exactly.
And you want to stop your body from making that, you might as well just go commit hara-kiri, because that's what you'd be doing.
But there's also a lot of chemistry in these foods.
There is.
Right? So at a certain point, like, it's going to be unexplainable why one person can eat one thing and another person can't. So being able to teach people how to pay attention to their bodies. Like, people come to us, they don't even know where their stomach is.
Yep.
Like, they're eating in front of the TV. Like, being able to help them to get in touch with how it feels when they eat something and know, just have an inner knowing about what's contributing to inflammation in their body or not, you know, this is huge.
Absolutely. And, you know, the next, I was just thinking this, and I'm just going to say it out loud just because it may sound weird, but the next step of that is you can eat the food and see how it feels and sits in your body. And that's hard for folks. But you can get to the point where you can reach out and touch the food and know that it's not going to sit well with you, maybe at that particular point in time versus another. Because energetically, you're not aligned with the energy of that food. At that moment, maybe 6 hours later, 2 days later, it's going to be fine. And I'd like people to just learn, start by tuning into their body with, okay, first of all, is this food or is this not food, right? M&M's versus a grape. Okay?
Apple versus apple turnover.
One is the apple versus apple turnover, right? One's a food, one's not a food. So let's first eliminate the non-foods from our diet. People always ask me, what's the first step? Like, let's just get rid of the stuff that's not really food that we just call food. You know, the food-like substances.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get rid of food-like substances, and then let's stick to food. Okay, once we're sticking to food, then it's a matter of, does this sit well with me or not? You may not know unless you have previous experience. And I love your chart because you could say, well, in the past when I ate this, I sometimes felt like I had a headache, so I'm not sure. So I'm going to put this in the not sure.
Yeah.
And then you come up with this list for yourself. You use these guideline things as guidelines.
Right.
And then you come up with your own Steph diet, the Tony diet, the Ally diet.
Yeah.
The diet that's right for you and your clients, and it's a mindset shift, and when you make the mindset shift, then it's easy for you to express it to people.
You can also give your clients tools based on who they are, right? Like, some people might do better if you teach them, like, Chinese pulse diagnosis, just a little bit, so they can feel if their energy is more vital when right after they ate something or less vital. Some people might be able to hear the little voice inside them that tells them whether they should be eating something or not. Some people might just have an inner knowing. So, like, just listening to how your client communicates with you and finding the way that they learn or the way that they will be able to learn about themselves.
I love that, because for some who are the more left-brain scientific, right, you can teach them to take a pulse. You can teach them to do their temperature after eating, you know, to take their blood sugar after eating. For others who are much more aligned with the woo-woo stuff, right, you can tell them to sit within and feel. You can say use a pendulum. You can use your body as a sway test. You can use muscle testing. But the starting point is, how does it feel when you consume it?
Yeah.
It gives you a stomach ache, even though Steph said, wow, this is a really good food source of vitamin A. I need to eat it. And I sit, doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't matter what Steph said. All respect to Steph, very brilliant. But it doesn't matter what Steph said.
Exactly.
No. So it's really the body says yes, the body says no, and then we help them to just move on. But I think the first step is getting rid of the non-foods. Wouldn't you agree?
Yep. Yes. That's just a no-brainer. Like, sometimes I just forget to mention that, right? But, like, our bodies need to be able to process all those chemicals that we're making inside of us. We don't need to bring in stuff that we don't need. Like, let's bring in stuff we need for health.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And the more we do that, the better it is. And, yes, there's going to be those clients that are so super, so super challenging. And I've got one or two I'm working with right now. And bless them, they mean well, and they're doing the best they can. And we just are still working on figuring it out.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? I'm looking here. Let me see if anybody has a question. Raise your hand. Two. We'll open you up. Part two.
Any questions?
No. I don't see any. Nobody wants to say anything? All right.
Right. Jenny says, how do you increase sulfate levels? Are there any supplements to take for this? Well, you can't really absorb sulfate. That's the thing here. It has to kind of go through that pathway. You can have foods and you can have MSM or you can have something that has sulfur compounds in it. But so that molybdenum and B1 and B2 and B12 working on methylation, iron, copper, like just really take a look at that pathway again. I may edit that and make it more readable. You know, making sure that they have all those nutrients and making sure that there's nothing, again, getting in the way of that conversion is what we can do for people.
We can do. And if we look at their genes, we're not going to see the genes on everybody. If we look at the genes and we see some of those SNPs, we're going to know, oh, we have to be more careful here. You know, let's go right into making sure we support that a little bit better because they're having some symptoms related to this problem, so let's just support it. Not all the genes are going to express themselves if the person's healthy and they can turn those genes back off again or turn them on, off, you know, change the expression with their diet and lifestyle, the epigenetic factors. But the truth, you know, it's just a matter of trying it. I remember when we were first looking at the sulfur genes and the sulfur pathways and looking at some of the genes, and somebody who was just learning it, and she looked at it, she goes, oh, my God, I have all these problems in sulfation. So I'm going to follow the thing of getting rid of all the foods that have sulfur in it. What did she eat? So what did she have to get rid of? Onions, garlic,
like
all
everything.
The broth.
Yeah.
all the good stuff, right? And she did that for 2 weeks, and she felt so much worse.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So what we don't want is the sulfites. That's where we feel like someone eats something and they get symptoms. That's where they get a migraine trigger or whatever. But we need sulfur in our bodies.
It is.
So, yeah. So we want to just make sure things don't get stuck at sulfite.
Sulfite, that's it. Because when the sulfite builds up, that's when you get a problem. And you see people, they go, oh, I'm going to take some NAC and acetylcysteine because it's so good for me and it's going to get converted to glutathione. And they get
maybe.
And they feel awful. So if somebody takes NAC and they feel awful, then you know that there's probably an issue here in this way, right? Or any kind of type containing thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, as much as a lot of people don't want to look at the biochemistry, and they don't believe you have to memorize biochemistry or know things off the top of your head, but to know that you have these charts. I have a folder that I keep, and it has a lot of these charts just printed out from various places. So I can review, they're having that reaction. I wonder why. And I've been able to just come up with ideas based on knowing or looking at those pathways to figure out why this particular person did terrible on Chase Tree. Why she should be doing better on Chase Tree. She's estrogen dominant. She needs progesterone. Why is she doing worse? We look find the reason. You can find it in the chemistry. It's just a matter of doing it. And the support group is here from us to be able to help. I don't have all. I remember being on with Laura one day. We were looking at why the heck is her iron so high and her ferritin so low? Like, there's something wrong in that pathway, right? We wouldn't expect it. Typical is you store the extra iron as ferritin. Why do we do that? We started looking right on a call, and I found a pathway. Had to do with melatonin. She goes, oh, my God, I just got my test done, and I'm low in melatonin. Wow. You know, so stuff like that, the more you know it, the better it is. So if you start people fighting when I'm teaching biochemical pathways, and you're like, oh, why do I need to know this? You don't have to memorize them. You just need to know where to look them up so that you know when people are having issues that you can.
And it's enough, yeah, to know when to look it up. So in this case, it's like when they're having a reaction to those sulfites in the environment or chemical sensitivities or sensitivities to, you know, preserved foods, then it,
right.
And they may also have some of these other issues, then it may trigger you to kind of look this up again and kind of think, okay, molybdenum or B1 or B2 or find ways to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Jenny, do you know about molybdenum? Do you suggest, like, about how much molybdenum, how do you blah, blah, blah. About how much, I guess you meant much, molybdenum do you suggest to take, and is there a specific form that's better than others, such as glycinate or...
Okay, so the thing that I do know about this is that taking too much molybdenum can have the opposite effect.
Yeah.
So again, we're Goldilocks principle. Do you have a molybdenum supplement that you like, Dr. Emery?
I usually use Ionics. I love Ionic minerals, so I get the liquid Ionics, a good skater, trace mm-hmm. minerals, something like that is what I use.
Yeah, I have the Ionic molybdenum as well.
It absorbs mm-hmm. better.
Yeah.
What I also wanted to say was there's this thing called negative feedback. We have negative feedback loops in all of our hormones and all of our pathways that if we get too much of something, it causes the body to stop making it. So with something like that happens with glutathione. So if somebody is got some glutathione pathway issues, you go, oh, let's give them glutathione, let's give them IVs every other day and give them less normal, and we're just going to give them a ton of glutathione. It shuts off the body converting down to glutathione. What that causes then is an upstream backup, and you can get excess sulfites because it's in that similar pathway. Okay? So... Well, it's not more of a good thing, right? More of a good thing is a better thing? No. Out. And we always have to consider negative feedback. So that was what happened when I talked about the chase tree. We were causing something else to get converted in a different way, cause a different problem. But we always have to think about that. Somebody has low DHEA. We think, yeah, let's give them 50 milligrams three times a day of DHEA. That's going to solve the problem. Sure. It's going to shut off their own body's production of DHEA.
Yeah.
You know, give them too much thyroid hormone, it's going to bring down. You see somebody that's TSH is down to 0.2. And you go, oh, that's good because they're on. No, it's not. Their body stopped working. It's like, oh, good, I don't have to do this anymore. It's like a muscle. I don't have to do this. I don't have to walk up the stairs. I just sit on the lift and it takes me up the stairs. So your biceps atrophy. Your quadriceps, the steps.
Yeah.
Right? This is how things work in the body, and it's all just a matter of finding the right balance. And this is where the science comes in. There's the art, and then there's the science. So,
yeah.
So he asked about a particular product.
Yeah, I just clicked on that.
I'm looking at it. I'm not seeing the ingredients yet.
I'm not loving silicon dioxide and hypermellose and maltodextrin. But again...
And then the ones with talc, though.
Yeah. If,
okay, propionibin, green tea, Chinese skull cap, holy basil, maltodextrin, silicon dioxide, maltodextrin. This is the best I've seen, actually.
True.
The others have sugar and...
There's no talc in this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better
than any of the others.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's not about it being perfect. It's just about seeing what's really the best thing for the person at the time. I do have clients who, like, refuse to have any grains. And I've tried to give them a supplement with rice hull powder and not being able to convince them to take it, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, and, you're going to have that. You're going to have people who have, for whatever religious reasons, economic reasons, social reasons, whatever, are not going to want to take something with certain ingredients in it. And even if that ingredient is going to be the best form, you've got to work around that and explain to them, look, the results are going to be slower. I respect it, and let's work with it. Because a lot of docs will send people away. I've had people come to me and say, look, I've been vegan for 30 years. I am not eating animal products. And my doctor told me that my adrenals won't heal unless I eat meat. I said, your doctor doesn't really know, is not educated about this. And
right.
With you. So
you don't need any one particular food to solve your problem.
No. Yes.
Yeah.
Everything is going to go away. It's like, no. Anyway, So we can go on forever about this, but I think that we've got everybody's questions.
Yeah, I think so too. I guess if there are more questions and if they're on the Facebook group or like you can tag us and
Okay, so Steph, you said I like Unto, UNTO, 300 micrograms, and Jenny says is Unto a brand.
Yeah, lol. Up to. I was
up
typing
to,
with one hand.
There you go.
Yeah, so if there's like a candida issue that's related to the histamine, then I like to take that's the one time when I would use like an actual capsule for molybdenum, and I would split it up. And so it's like three times a day, you know, 100 micrograms or 150 at the most, just because they need it to detox the acetaldehyde from the candida.
Mm-hmm.
And they also need it for the histamine and everything else that the yeast is producing. So that's the only time I would make an exception to the ionic thing. Yeah.
Finally, wasn't there a particular strain of gut bug that produces the DAO?
Yes, yes. Okay, so any of the bifidobacteria, really. And you need to kind of go and see if you can get a therapeutic amount of it. So not a billion, you know, but 300 billion kind of thing. Work your client up to that.
Right. You have them work up to it because they can get some gastric distress or distress
exactly.
If they do. That sounds like a really good starting point for any of these folks because it's easy enough, right? It's
mm-hmm.
not a diet overhaul, but let's get their microbiome working better.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Okay. I think we've got it. I'm going to check one more time if anybody raised their hand. But, yeah, we have Eva. Hi,
yes.
Eva.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah,
what's
hi.
Your
Do
question?
You have a question, Eva?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can.
I'm sorry. I just, I'm still muted, so I thought you couldn't hear me, but... Hello, brilliant women. I have two questions for you. Have you used, with this particular issue, Himalayan sulfur-rich black salt to help people with the sulfuration and the issue with the glutathione and other things that they might have? Have you had any experience with it?
So the black salt, there's two black salts that I know of. One of them is like a black lava salt, and the other one is what it's called black salt, but it's not a Himalayan salt, and it's actually called Kala Namak.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the one that's called black salt that we'll see in like recipes.
Right.
I have had experience with people reacting to that,
okay.
honestly, people with sulfate issues, but it is individual. So I've had better experience with MSM.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you can, work at incorporating that, like on its own in a glass of water, maybe with something to make it taste okay.
And then watch.
That's my preference.
Okay.
If tolerance symptom, then you know that there's something going wrong in this pathway.
Yeah.
Right. Especially when they cannot tolerate the sulfur.
Right,
exactly.
I
didn't know it is increasing small amounts of this salt. I didn't know if you had any experience with it or not. So just
I bought a bag of it once, and it's sitting in my cabinet. I don't even yet. So I was going to just play with it from a culinary standpoint, but I haven't really done anything with it. Sorry.
Right, it does have a very offensive smell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's you can get used to things, but I didn't know if it had any benefit for people with those issues. So I know when you cook with it, it loses the smell completely. So it's just initial exposure to sulfur, really strong.
Botanic smell? Is that what you mean?
Yep. It's very, very strong. So when you open the container, the whole kitchen smells like that, like a rotten egg.
It's like it's awesome for making like a pretend egg salad or whatever. If you make a kind of a sunflower seed-based kind of like egg salad kind of wrap or something like that, you can use that. It can go either way.
Yeah.
If people have issues with sulfur, they might have issues with that.
Okay. I've used the one from Nepal. It's a handmade salt, but I haven't used it except one person that had histamine issues, and she's tolerating it well, but I haven't seen, many people with this condition, so that's why I just wanted to know what your feedback was.
Cool. Take a picture of your package.
Actually, I'm going to send a link right now to you guys if you want to see it. It's this is something that I've been purchasing for my personal use, and I like it. So here is the link. You can take a look at it and see what do you think about it. My second question is, have you ever heard of people having histamine and, you know, the DAO SNP problem, having motion sickness?
Feeling nauseous.
Specifically motion sickness, specifically.
Yeah, but yeah, so feeling nauseous in whatever circumstances can be a symptom of this, of like a phenol or a histamine reaction. So with histamines, feeling nauseous easily is kind of all that we can really get to. So in whatever context, it could be motion sickness, could be if they don't eat for a while, like, yeah, it could be, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of the things that I ask people when I work with the histamine, and I learned it from Ben Lynch, and I just didn't know if you guys knew anything about that. He said that pigs, you know, the one that actually have the enzyme that they harvest the DAO enzyme from, they don't have any motion sickness, but people with low amount of this particular enzyme really have a lot of motion sickness. So I didn't know if you had any feedback on that also. Because when I have people that have allergies and histamines and other things, and I ask them that question, that's not necessarily true. I actually haven't had anybody that said, yes, we have this problem.
I don't know, the nausea, like, I know that's a part of this picture, but it's also super confusing because it can be so many other things. It's just...
Yeah, no, that's okay. I just didn't know if there was any more information. I haven't seen anything, so that's why I just asked those questions. So,
good question.
Appreciate it. Brilliant conference. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you to Steph for all this work. But I wanted to mention, I'm going to ask Steph if you know of any questionnaires. You know, we have questionnaires to try to isolate. And I know you gave those little charts, so those are helpful. But is there particular questionnaires that says, oh, if a person has these particular symptoms, they're not getting well with the stuff you're giving them, maybe they have a sulfur problem or a histamine problem or whatever?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to do a bit of searching. I think it would benefit us all to have a chart like that or just a list of questions to ask our clients. So we can add that below the module.
Yeah.
If I can either find one online or we can just devise one.
Cool. I think we're done. Thank you, everybody. Steph, this is amazing, awesome, great information, great presentation. Thank you all for your contributions and your questions. And I'm looking one last time. We don't have any more, so thank you, and we'll talk to you again another time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.